Welcome to How I Raised It, the podcast that goes behind the scenes with entrepreneurs who've raised capital. We uncover the tips, tricks, and techniques they use to get investors to write a check. Strap in and turn it up.
Hi, welcome to another episode of How I Raised It. Today I have Guillermo Guetta of Workcast coming to us from Santa Monica, California. How's your day going, Guillermo?
Hi, Nathan. Thank you for having me. The day is going great. Just very busy working, but I'm glad that you approached me, and I'm happy to be here sharing my story about what we're doing.
Great. Glad to have you. So what is Workcast? What do you guys do? How did you start this business?
Yeah, so Workcast is a platform that helps teams manage their work and get more done. Project management, to-do apps, is not new, but always the hardest part is to get your team on board. So we all tried so many different ones, but it's just always it's how you convince, you know, your peers to join you. So what we did at Workcast, instead of making your team come to us, we actually going where your team already is, and that is Slack or Microsoft Teams or any other chat platform in at the enterprise level. So what we did, we created a very strong Slack integration that while you're having a conversation, it allows you to create tasks, assign tasks to other peers, see what your, you know, the outstanding work for the day. And just in a very conversational way, and actually make it super simple for other users to join you on Workcast. So we really, you know, lower the barrier of entry, make it super simple for create these network effects, and you know that's how we've been able to grow, thanks to this Slack integration. This issue in which you're having so many conversations at the same time, and it's always kind of, you know, switching different like Trello and Jira and all this, and like there needs to be an easy way for me to capture my actionable items while I'm working. So I started on the side to kind of, you know, playing around with this idea, and then Slack kind of like was picking up. It was like 2016, and I was like, oh, you know, I made an integration that will help me, and actually put it online, make it available for everyone, and it just becomes like very popular very quickly. So that's how I started with the idea, and then you know, we started, okay, well, this is useful for some other people, maybe useful for me, and then, you know, kind of we took it from there, and we never stopped.
No, that's exciting. So were you built, was Workcast built natively for Slack, or were you, did you build it before Slack launched their platform?
So I think at the time it was Slack just came out with their like marketplace app directory. I didn't have a website. I didn't have a mobile app, web app. It was just the integration of Slack. And that's what I made available public for everyone to use. And then the idea, the problem that I was having, it resonated with a lot of other users. So they started using it quite heavily. And then I was like, okay, well, I need to start, you know, they wanted more features. They wanted like a dashboard. They wanted a mobile app. They want this, they want that. So it was just me and Anjali, my co-founder. And then we just like, okay, well, we had to continue building this. And then basically we, you know, fast forward the story. In September 2016, we actually applied for Y Combinator. We made it all the way to the last stage. They flew us to San Francisco for our interview, but we didn't get in. Uh-huh. But at that time for us was like, I think we're onto something. You know, I think, you know, we had a good amount of traction. And again, we only had this Slack integration, but it was this a new use case that we wanted to explore more. And we needed capital so we can hire someone else to build this with me and, you know, continue exploring this. And we eventually landed into Macker Lab, which is Macker Capital. It's an accelerator down here in Santa Monica.
Yep.
We joined the accelerator in January 2017. So since January 2017, we went heads down and we had this really popular Slack integration. How are we going to create a company out of this? What is Workcast is solving for these users that Asana, Microsoft Projects, you know, all these other tools are not solving for them? And so we spent a lot of time. We didn't really have a name. We were not Workcast at that time. We were just like to bot. It was just, you know, it was a lot of finding a message, finding a story, and finding really like what are we doing differently? And ultimately, really what we're focusing on is conversational experiences. And the reality is that, you know, Slack, Microsoft Teams, Stride, Facebook Workplace, there's all these new chat platforms, chat experiences in the enterprise, and people are interacting with software in a way that they haven't done it before. You know, they wanna have a conversation and they wanna have access to the information right there, right now, to what it makes sense for that particular moment. And with millennials joining the workplace, you know, the workplace, chatting interfaces, they're just not gonna go anywhere. They're just gonna stay here. And this is just the beginning. We can think about how Workcast can enhance a video call. Imagine finish a video call and Workcast can tell you, oh, this is stuff that you guys need to work on. Or how Workcast can improve a voice call or all the different communication channels, and how can we help you manage your work in a more effective way. I think nowadays, when you start a company, you have to think about a platform. You have to think about how do we integrate to the tools that people already pick. You know, it's very common that, you know, people already have their favorite chat, they have their favorite like Zapier, they have their favorite email client and their favorite calendar client. You're not going to be able to make them all switch to your application, so you just have to be inside of the workflow. And that's just how we really find in a new sort of use case, and that's how we resonate in a lot with users. So, you know, since 2017, we joined Market, we have a few thousand of companies active. We finished 2017 with over 50,000 companies using WorkCast.
50,000?
Yeah.
Wow. 5000. That's yeah. Great.
So we are in the top 10 of the Slack marketplace. We are one of the most popular apps over there. And we will continue executing on that mission of like really improving the way people manage their work. And that what eventually, you know, that success and that fast growth, which eventually led us to raise our round, which is recently closed. But it was just basically just heads down on the product and really understanding why users are liking this, how do we continue to grow the different use cases, and how we continue to expand within our organization effectively, and how do we continue to grow that fast.
You know, we're going to get deep into the fundraising, but just a couple questions on the marketing. Is most of your, you're in the top 10 in Slack's marketplace. Is all your marketing being done there? Is that where all your customers are coming from, or do you have to and let these 50,000 customers roll in?
Yeah. Yes, we basically. Well, I don't want to say that. I sit back and see, but yes, we do have a very free organic growth through the Slack marketplace, which is our main customer acquisition channel. Due to the fact that we are such a popular app, you know, this like this circle, vicious circle, in which the more popular you are, the more popular you get. And which really help us. I think ultimately, you know, users it's not just, you know, acquiring the users is just only one part. Then you want to make sure that they stay with you. Then you want to make sure that they actually, you know, if you have a company of 100 people, maybe one user install WorkCast in their Slack team. But you have to make sure that the other 99 people are finding out about WorkCast, they are finding it useful too. So yes, we have one problem solved, which is a very hard one, which is like, how do we get users to try our product? The rest of the team members know about it. So that's where we really work on this integration aspect, because the reality is like, you know, I can build the best task management app in the world, but that's not going to make me successful. What is going to make us successful is just to really be embedded in the user's workflow, be embedded in their communications, and just making a very seamless experience, not like a broken, oh, please come to me, do this, and then come back to your other, you know, just, I think, I don't know if it's clear, but that's really our play, and that's how I see this growing, right?
How many apps are in their marketplace now? So you're in the top 10. Out of how many, do you know?
I don't want to, I would say maybe 500 to 1,000. I think they're quite a lot already nowadays in the marketplace. Probably there are some official numbers from Slack, but yeah, there are a lot.
Were you very early? Were you one of the first 10 or 20 or 30 in there?
Yes. I would say I was probably in the 50, maybe like application between 50 to 100, I would say. And there were quite a few, but not like that many as there are today. So yes, I think that first to market, if you want to call it, that probably was an advantage for us as well, yes.
Gotcha. Okay, so let's talk about raising capital. So did you bootstrap it until you went into Mucker Lab, and then they put in, was Mucker Lab your first money into the company?
Correct, yes. We actually were not even incorporated before we joined Mucker, so yes, we bootstrapped it. Basically what we did, so at that time, backstory, my Anjali is also my wife, and she's the co-founder of the company with me, and we were living in Australia at that time. And she's Australian. So what we did, you know, so Australia is like San Francisco, like New York, or even part of LA. It's like a very expensive place to live. And if we wanted to bootstrap a company, that's not really the place that you want to do it, because, you know, all your money goes in rent, basically. So what we did was we had saved some money, and we went to live in Southeast Asia a lot and some other countries in Europe. And I'm originally from Argentina, so we move around in places where our cost of living was like quite low, and allow us to travel a little bit, but also just really keep our costs low and continue to explore this opportunity and the business. And that's how we kind of bootstrap it, savings and just keeping a low cost life.
Wow. In Southeast Asia and then near Argentina. That's interesting. That's pretty cool.
There's a big movement around, you know, the digital nomads and people that live there, place that they live and they go abroad. just to kind of explore opportunities. So I think it's like a trend, like an up-and-coming trend, still a very small niche, but it's actually when you go out there, there's a tons of people doing similar things.
Yeah.
Things, Stripe started that way. Yeah.
It's amazing. Some of Founder Suite's people that work for us, Helga, who if you ever go into our chat window, you'll see Helga's picture. She was doing that lifestyle. She was over in Bali and, you know, traveling around. It's pretty awesome if you're able to pull that type of gig. I've got kids, so I can't really do it anymore, but I love that idea. So,
well, yes. At that time, we didn't have kids. Now I have a 5-month baby, so that's not going to happen anymore. Uh-oh. But at that time, we were just me and my wife and, you know, that.
Congratulations. Okay, so Mucker was the first money in, and how much did they put in?
Yep. So they did, I think that's not a public information available.
Okay.
Because the deals depends on the company and the stage of the company, but they normally do a check size between, you know, 50K to 200K. So
okay.
It depends on that, the situation percentage and a check size. It's not like a standard term for everybody the same. So that's what I don't want to share, just, you know, to make other startups uncomfortable.
No problem. But it's typical incubator, accelerator type of check size.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing that we haven't seen, nothing out of the ordinary.
And was that program worth it? I mean, you hear about it up here in San Francisco. I don't know too much about it, but I know a few folks who've been through it.
Yeah, no, so, I mean, I think when we didn't make it into YC and we start kind of like shopping around for accelerators, what we like about Mucker was that it wasn't a 3-month program, you break it or die. You know, it's an ongoing program and you graduate from the program when you raise your seed round.
Mm.
So for us, that was like a big selling point, because I'm like, you know, I may make it in 3 months or I may not make it in 3 months. It may need 6 months. And so that really resonated with me initially at the time. And I think that was what eventually kind of led us to move into Mucker, because we like it that we can take more time to kind of, you know, it's not like you have your demo day and it's just like, oh, you know, all the stress. And then I don't know what happened after that.
Yeah.
So that really what really helped us. And, you know, Will and Eric are our mentors and investors. I think they really, really help us to focus, you know. I think when you start a company, it's like, do you make money? Do you focus on growth? Do you focus on both at the same time? Do you focus? And as an entrepreneur, you get sidetracked a lot. So we have these weekly office hours. We go in there and you talk about your problems. And then they will just like, no, that's not worry about this. Focus on this. Or that's not enough, good enough. You have to push it harder. And really just like keep motivating you and keep you on track to what is really important for your business. So I would say we would never be able to raise the money that we raised and be where we are now if it wasn't for Mucker, to be honest.
Oh, that's great. So you had two mentors and then you leaned on them quite a bit throughout the program. Is that true?
Yes, exactly. So Will and Eric, they're three partners, but we would deal mostly with Will and Eric. And they just focus on different things. Will specifically is more products oriented and he really focused, and Eric helped us a lot with fundraising as well, but yes, that's mostly it.
So when did you, so that was, you went into Mucker in January, when did you decide to start to raise this round?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we did start talking to investors at around October, I would say early October, end of September, early October. I probably started working on the deck on September, during September, and then I think I had my first meeting with a VC end of September, which it didn't go well at all. Like that's the one that you blew up. And then we actually got really, really good at after that one.
Hopefully that wasn't your top choice. I always tell founders, you know, do your first couple pitches with investors that are maybe lower down your target list.
Yeah, exactly. It was actually, it was an intro from Eric or Will, and it was more like, just go and talk to him. He may not even invest in your space, but just go and present to him and get his feedback. And that investor in particular, he was like super helpful. Like he was like, look, this is not something I'm interested in, but let me help you what I think you could do better. And we took that feedback on and then we kind of redid our whole deck. And after that, everything just started going really well.
When did you know it was time to raise money? Did you have a certain level of traction that the guys at Mucker were counseling you, hey, you're fundable now? Like, when did you know now is the time?
I think, to be honest, I think as a founder, you probably feel like it's never going to be the right time, because you always want to feel like you want to have that feature, you want to have that number, you want to have that for a seed round. Let's just focus on a seed round. It's a very different story for a series A. For a seed round, you probably feel like it's never going to be the right time. And I was feeling that way because I always kind of want to have a little bit more and a little bit more. And we got a little bit of, I think, from Will and Eric, it was like, I was like, hey, you know, we're going to be running out of money soon. So we're going to have to start thinking about raising money. So that's a very good indication that you have to do something about that, because especially we were focusing on growth. So we are focusing mostly on user adoption and growth, and we are not focusing on revenue. So we needed to have really good numbers there, but not having revenue means that I'm just using my pre-seed, you know, money, and I'm going to run out of money. So that was one indication, but we didn't wait until it was zero in the bank account. We were like, hey, we have like, you know, this amount of days left, 1 month, 2 months left. What do you think about this? And then we started, what's your story, right? Like, what I think it wasn't really a feature or a particular number. It's like, do we have a story to tell here? And we have a story because we've been growing exponentially for the last, you know, 6 to 8 months. We have, like, at that time when we raised, I think we were 30,000 companies active. So it was like, we have a story to tell here, and you need to feel confident about the story. And when you're going to go to talk to the investors, it's not going to be so much about the features. It's not a product demo. It's actually, what's your vision? What's your big picture here? What's your big vision here? And then you can go into the product demo and what it does. But investors know that your product, probably that it looks at the pre-seed stage, it's going to be very different to like your series A product. So your product matters, but what it matters most, and this is my advice when I talk to any entrepreneur, is like, what's your big picture here? What's your vision? And what actually you're solving? What is your, why do you think your market is so big? Why do you think it's the right time to say, man, raise money to do this right now? And just your story has to be very compelling. Your product has to go along with that. And then your metrics hopefully prove part of that story. But yeah, that's
great. No, that makes sense. Was your, you know, big picture story, how much of it was focused on, we're betting on Slack as a platform, this is like a play on Slack? Mm-hmm. Was that much of the story, or not so much?
I think it was, I would say, one level above that, which is conversational experiences in the workplace and just the way we are communicating constantly with other, you know, with our peers, and communication channels that are like on text and voice and everything, and just how we have so much noise in the workplace and how do we can improve those communication experience and allow people to manage their work more effectively. Slack is an example of one of those new trends, a new paradigm shift towards like, hey, I want to interact with my software through conversation and stuff. So like Slack is more a proof of case, a proof that there is a market and there is a need. But we look at that and saying, okay, how do we go expand to other platforms? How do we expand to other communication channels? Like imagine having an email thread and you want to turn that email into actionable items. Can we do that? Yes, today we can. You have like, you know, natural language processing, you have AI, like tons of things that we can do. But it is more about how do we improve communication experiences and manage people that work. The market leaders like Asana, Jira, all those are like 10 years market leaders. So it takes, you know, there hasn't been an innovation in the Slack, just one case.
Yeah. Awesome. That's an interesting big vision. How about, you know, you said you had about 30,000 active companies. What mm-hmm. percent were paid, yeah, if you're willing to share?
Oh, no. It was pre-revenue. Just actually, we have a payload pie program, which means that we have a premium offering and we were taking teams kind of like more on application basis, and we were working with them very closely to make sure that the product, our premium offering, fits their needs. So they were paid, but the number of companies they were paid more on like on the three-digit, you know, number, not on a percentage that is worth mentioning. It's actually very small percentage of companies that were helping us defining and still going on today defining our premium offering.
Gotcha. But you, when you're pitching investors, you had a path to a business model, a path to revenue.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, that for sure. Like you need to show that how are you gonna make money. And what happened to us was, you know, for us, we were like, we consciously decided with the, you know, with a pre-seed money and the resources that we have, we decided to focus only on growth and making sure that we have a really, really good product. And then we said, how do we make sure that we can make money of this? So we start building a premium product, and we said we start adding teams slowly because we wanted to make sure the premium product is right. And when we got really good indications that how much they're willing to pay and how much, you know, we can charge them and all the stuff, then we were like, that's our story. It's more like, hey, we need to raise a seed round because we want to actually continue building this premium product so we can take it to market and we can actually start making money. So for us, our first goal as a seed company is to hit, you know, that million ARR in 1 year, and just, you know, revenue is like the most important thing that we need to do now. But we could have not done that if we didn't have a very good, strong top of the funnel and a very good, strong product that grows on its own. So then now we can focus on the revenue aspect.
Yeah, but that makes sense.
Yes, you have to talk about market size. You have to talk about market opportunity, how much you're planning to charge, how much money can you make, and all those things. You need to have a very good understanding of that for sure. Yeah.
But your pitch really for that round, were you calling a pre-seed round or a seed round? What was it?
So we call it a seed round, yeah.
A seed round. It was really the big picture vision, which I like a lot, the growth story, mm-hmm. and then the beginnings of a yeah. revenue model, basically.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Got it.
That's pretty good, yeah.
So, okay, so who do we have? We had Graycroft, Mucker.
Yep.
Graycroft led the deal?
Capital. Yeah, Graycroft led the deal, correct, yes.
And how did you get in touch with them? Was that one of the Mucker guys' interests?
Yes. I think for us, when we started, maybe it's like when we started kind of planning this, I wanted to do VCs only. I think we, you know, I started with my ideal team. I say I wanted to do VCs. I wanted to have not that many in the round. I had, you know, 4-5 max checks. I didn't want to have to deal with that many stakeholders. And I want to have, you know, top tier VCs that can help us on this stage and the next stage, etc. So we put a list together and we have the list that the guys from Mucker can introduce us. So we kind of like match our list of LA VCs with the list that they can introduce me to. And then we kind of put like a short list of like, I think it was something like 20, 25 kind of VCs that we want to talk to. And then from there, we start organizing meetings and yeah. But it definitely helps a lot having the Mucker lab, the Mucker, so introductions, referrals. I think it would have been a very different story if you're just on your own. I mean, just getting those first call intro is very, very hard. So that's probably my other advice. Unless you're a successful entrepreneur that comes from another company that you just got acquired, I think if you're just on your own, bootstrapping, and going for VCs, it's going to be very, very hard. Like, you need to have an introduction from a referral, like, someone that is like, you know, very strong relationship with them that is like, okay, I'm going to give you my time, I think.
Yeah. Were you only targeting LA, Los Angeles investors?
Well, I think as I like being here. I like the Santa Monica ecosystem. I like how the tech scene here is kind of booming a lot right now. And I thought it would be very strategic for us, for our lead to be here in LA. It make it easier to just meet them right away. You just have, they are just right there next to you. And it makes a lot of sense. And so that's what my wish list was like, let's just try to get a VC here in LA. Yeah.
Yeah. So you had a list of about 25 to 30 targets. Yeah. Is that right?
Probably, yes. Yep.
And then was Mucker able to basically make an introduction to everyone on that list? Or did you have to?
No, I had about 15. I went through the list before the call, and I think I have about 15 meetings, 15 different meetings.
Yeah. Got it. 25 target, 15 meetings, and then, mm-hmm. you know, to the extent you're willing to share, did you have a competitive deal? Or did you have more than one VC interested in leading? And if so, how did you choose? Yeah.
No, I think we did have a bit of we did have a bit of a competition. I think when we started talking, we got really good at, people were very interested in what we were doing because we were kind of still, you know, we were in still mode. Not many people know about us. And then we go and we tell the story and people get really excited about it. And basically the competition was, I really didn't kind of shop around terms or anything like that. It was more about who is going to be the first move first. And we weren't very direct about it. And then when that happened, then it was a bit of like, okay, who is going to make the first move? And then when someone makes the first move, then, you know, how the other one's going to react to that. And then, so there was a little bit of like, I wouldn't say we got oversubscribed. I don't want to like mislead, but there was we did have more attention and more interest than we needed for the round that we wanted to make. And then as you move forward, yes, you kind of start picking how you want to go. Some people move faster, which is better for them, better for me. Some people take longer, and sometimes that kind of like, okay, well, I already have these terms. If you're going to take another 2 weeks, I can't put all these people on hold. You know, like that kind of stuff. Happened.
How much, so you started raising money in October or September, October. Yeah. How long did it take you, and how many, you know, meetings were you having? What was the actual kind of day, week looking like?
I think I was having a lot of meetings like the first month. I didn't really have a process, but we tried to just, you know, started reaching out to people and try to put all the meetings as much as we can within 1 or 2 weeks. So I wanted to meet, all those targets, all this potential, I wanted to have them all at the same time, so that way I could create some sort of momentum. And also because really, you have to value your time. Like I can't just have one meeting this week and then another meeting the following week and then another meeting, because you're going to be always waiting, just, you know, wondering, oh, what this PC is going to say to me, or what that guy is going to say. So you want to have them as close as possible, as much as you can, and then see how from that back funnel, then you see which ones are actually moving forward next and stuff. I think, so basically, let's say that I started early October, and then we got a term sheet quite quickly within a week or two, and then we end up signing that term sheet, I think, in like in a month. And then at that time, we already had the rest of the commitment. So it was a very, we were fortunate enough that it was a quick, we were on the quick side of the process to get the term sheet and to get the commitments. And we actually end up in a situation in which we were like, you know, having this, you know, we wanted to raise 2 million and we were like already in 1.8 or something like that. And then the VCs, they don't want to do such a small check. And we end up kind of like, well, like, you know, we only have space for this little. And then we kind of wanted to close. I didn't want to continue delay the whole process because that was, you know, we were already October, then it's November, then it's like, you know, Thanksgiving, and then in December, and then, you know, the whole thing can get very cold very quickly. So we were like, you know what, the terms were flexible enough that I could close on, you know, 1.85. That's what we did. And again, we were in that situation in which it's like, guys were telling me, look, I want to invest, but I can't do 150, or, you know, I need to do at least, you know, 500, they want a 2-digit percentage in the company, etc. So we had a lot of those conversations, but it was very fast. It was very fast for us. Yeah.
Interesting. So Graycroft led, and then who else came in on the round?
So then it's Spider Capital. It's a VC, seed stage VC in San Francisco, which also was an introduction from Marker. And then, well, Marker, of course, itself, they follow from their original pre-seed. They did a seed investment as well. And then it's a firm in Japan called Dream Incubator, which came through Graycroft. It happens that they were interested as well in what we were doing, and they, again, fast movers, and, you know, Slack was just releasing into Japan, and it was like, oh, this makes sense, and they also were part of the round. But again, it was like a four people round. It was very slim, very smooth, the whole process.
Yeah, interesting. Did you pitch Slack's venture arm? Did you approach those guys?
We did spoke with them. We did spoke with them. And I think ultimately, I think the space that we are in, it's a bit of like a competitive space. And I think, we just didn't find a way, or, you know, I think for them it's a bit challenging to pick winners in this space when there are like so many platforms out there doing kind of like the same sort of trying to, even if it's direct competitors, even if you're not approaching the problem the same way, there's just, I think eventually, we decided that maybe not at this stage, and then, you know, we kind of went our own way. But yeah, we are in conversations with them, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. What was it about Graycroft? Why did you pick them? Was there some chemistry with the partner that's going to be on your board, or was it portfolio, or how did you pick them, basically?
Mm-hmm. So we had a really good conversation. So Mark was our investor, Mark Terrick, and we had a great meeting with them, and Sean, which is his, who works with him. So I think we had a really, really good first meeting. They got exactly what we were doing. They understood exactly where we are at, and they understood where we need to go. And they give us the confidence that we needed, that, hey, you guys need the money so you can continue building what you're doing, continue executing exactly the way you're doing. and we're going to be supporting you. And Grapefruit is a very, you know, it's been around for a long time. They have tons of connections in the all around the U.S. They have offices in New York, they have offices in France. So it's like they're very well connected. They are very well, whatever you need, you just pick up the phone, they facilitate it for you. So for us, it would just have such a strong VC in our bag. It would put us really, you know, give us like the guarantees that we have the good foundation for, you know, whatever comes next and next and next. I mean, Greycroft normally does Series A, it's an app. So having them on seed, you know, it's just really putting you in a good place for like whatever's going to happen next, how much money cash you're going to need or anything that's going to happen. So that's for us. Going to meet some, you know, conversations don't flow. But I remember with them, I didn't feel like I was pitching them. It was just a conversation. And then they really got it right away. And then they moved very quickly with us. So they value my time, value their time. It was a very nice sort of like, you know, match, I would
just
say.
Just felt good, yeah.
Combination of all those aspects.
Yeah, that's good. That's nice to hear. Did you have to give a board seat at the seed round, or are you saving this?
So at this stage, no, we haven't actually the term sheet. They were not explicitly defining those things, so we actually put the board on hold until later with the company, probably closer to raise our Series A. At this stage, the idea was like we don't want to start adding board meetings and all these things when you have so much work to do. So we kind of put that on hold, and we're going to continue. But so we don't have anything on those terms yet set. It was more about we're going to continue. We're going to work on that later. Yeah.
What are you thinking next in terms of fundraising? Do you have a target of when you'll raise your Series A, or will you let the numbers, you know, your growth dictate that? How are you thinking about fundraising?
I think, you know, for now, I would say you have to never stop talking to your investors or any other investor that want to have a conversation with you. Probably the best time to talk to your investor is always when you don't need the money rather than when you do need the money. Mm-hmm. But in terms of targets, yes, we are looking to, you know, get our millionaire ARR by the end of the year and those kind of milestones that you want to hit to be more, to have a strong story for your Series A. So I'm a big fan of the story. So what my story shows that we have the growth, we are hitting the milestones, and we can get it now, you know, eventually also have a nice valuation as well and be happy with those metrics that we are showing, then we will do the next round. But it's not going to happen in less than a year. I mean, that's for sure. It's probably going to take another year for us to even start having formal conversations about it. But again, you want to still entertain your potential investors or your existing investors or how your company is doing, how you metrics and milestones that you're hitting. So that way, you know, by the time comes, you're already ready.
Yeah. So two, probably last two questions, I think, unless you have more feedback or advice. What advice would you give founders in Los Angeles for raising money? Any, obviously Mucker Lab is one resource. Any advice or resources they should check out, you know, for people in Los Angeles to raise money? And kind of a corollary to that, as a foreigner, you're from Argentina, your wife's from Australia, any tips for, you know, non-natives in navigating the funding landscape in America? kind of a big question.
Yeah, no, that's okay. In terms of advice for any LA entrepreneur, I think, to be honest, it's not very far from any advice for any entrepreneur around the US or anywhere. I think investors are ready to invest. Investors have the money, but you just need to, I think it comes to you to have a very strong story for your seed round company. You have to have a very good story, big picture. You need to come in and show the investors, especially VCs, why your market is so big, why your company is going to solve this problem, what kind of problem, and why you're the right person who's doing this, and why now is the right time to do this. And I can't emphasize enough how important it is to get this story. And one of the things that I also realize is that when I tell this to entrepreneurs, they always try to tell me a story about their product. And they tell me about its features and like this mobile app and this like amazing Slack integration, for example, or the amazing technology that is. And unless you really your company's technology, the reality is that that just doesn't really matter that much. You don't have to talk to your investors like you talk to your customers. You have to talk to your investors like your investors, and you talk to your customers about the product. But your investor is a very different pitch. It's a very different story that you have to tell there. And Yes, and that's I think that's the strongest advice I can give about regarding to that. And in terms of navigating LA, I think LA, you know, the good thing about LA is that not like that many VCs. I mean, you go to some to the Bay Area and there are like so many VC seed stage funds. They're like so many. They're everywhere, and I think it's harder probably there to decide which one is the right one and which not. LA doesn't have like that many, so you can probably put them in an Excel spreadsheet. You can easily navigate, you know, go to every single website, look at every single portfolio company, look at every single partner, and you can really get your top 10, 15, 20 very easily, which in the Bay Area is a very different story. They're like, you know, they're popping out every day, one new seed stage company, VC firm. So that's much harder. In LA, you can get your list very, very easily and just focus on some of them that make sense for you. And get interest. Don't try to send them emails, off call emails or LinkedIn connections. That's never, never, ever going to work. You need those interests, definitely. Warm interest.
What would you tell your Argentinian self, you know, years ago? I don't know when you moved here, but what advice would you tell yourself if you were going back in time to when you were still back in Argentina?
To be honest, I think, I relocated in the U.S. in 2011. I actually was working in a company in Orange County, and that would eventually was a startup that was part of Star Engine in 2011, Howard Marks from Activision. Anyway, so I've been on the startup scene, on the sort of like an entrepreneur scene for quite some time, but the advice that I would give myself, which I think I executed well, but I would do it again, is like, you just don't have to give up. I think you just have to work hard. The stories that I tell today are only the highlights of the story. We got the term sheet, we got this, the terms and the money, and you close, and that's what normally what people hear about, and no one wants to hear your sad stories. But the reality is that there are probably those, if there are like five highlights on the story, there are probably 10 sad low points on your story. And and this is a roller coaster of emotions. You start the week thinking, oh my God, I'm gonna close this week, and then you finish the week and you're like, this is never going to happen, it's just going to go nowhere. The amount of work that you had to put on, that it makes you question, like, why I just don't go back to Australia again, go back to Expedia, have my sort of like nice paycheck and don't have to worry about any of this. So or go back to Argentina and leave, you know, be my friends and my family that I miss so much. I think it's like, you got to keep going, you got to continue work hard. And when finally you get to these successful stories, you're going to look back and you will be like, oh, now I understand why all this happens, because it got me to this point, you know? A bit philosophical at the end of the conversation, but I just wanted to emphasize how important it is to continue and focus and work hard.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's pretty interesting. It's actually really interesting. It's the startup roller coaster. Just a note, go ahead, please.
Sorry. No, I want to make a note regarding the me and Anjali and being from another country and, you know, sort of, I think, I want to emphasize that we didn't run into any problems, like in any way of people not accepting us or not talking to us because we are foreigners or anything like that. I think which is fine. Everything was fine, especially, you know, here in LA or even San Francisco. It's a very multicultural city. It's like wasn't really a problem for us. If anything, people like that I have an accent. But I think in general, I will also emphasize that don't get discouraged if you're just not an American person or like certain ethnics. I think it's not really about that. It's just more about what's your story, what you're doing, why you're the right person to doing this. And it goes beyond, you know, countries and ethnicities or backgrounds, I think.
Yeah, that's a positive, optimistic note. I like that. Work hard and it'll work out. Very good. All right. Any last bits of advice or anything, any plug you want to make? Tell people to check out workcast.io?
Workcast.io. Yes. No, I think if you guys are listening and you are use Slack on your organization, you probably have something like Trello or Asana, or actually 30% of the people that come to us, they don't even have anything. They're just managing the stuff with an Excel spreadsheet or a notepad. So give us a shot. You can install it. It's free to use for as long as you wanted to use for free, and just, you know, have a look, play around with it. I think it's going to really help you pick up your productivity in your team. And I'm very reachable. So if you're an entrepreneur in LA and you feel like you want to ask me some question, you know, add me on LinkedIn or shoot me an email. I'm also, when I get the time, I do not mind helping people as well.
Is it just Guillermo at workcast.io?
Yes, correct. But this only for entrepreneurs and people seeking help. No recruiters, no service providers, no, because I get already enough of them and I already ignore enough of them. So this is only for people really seeking for real help.
I don't know why, but I get so many people trying to sell me database lists. I don't know. My inbox is full of that for some reason. I'm not sure why.
You know what they do now? I can see when they send me an email, they try all the different combinations. So they do Guillermo.getty at WordCast. They do GG at WordCast. They do, they do all the different variations of my first name and last name and initials. And, they're going to get one right? So you can see that it's like, just because you did that, even if your service is amazing, I'm not going to actually use your service.
That's funny. That's good point for any marketers out there. Yes. All right. Yes. Very good. Well, I appreciate it and continued good success for WordCast. And thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to speak to you, Nathan.
Thank you, Guillermo.